Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Wake up! Wake up! Mike Mulligan, David Haw.
Everything is still in play, and it's still in play because they activated the reset of Hallis Hall.
I totally agree.
And Ben Johnson is here to fix all the problems.
When you hear it uttered, as in from the article, from the upcoming book, that Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die. Like, from a distance, did you see that? And what do you think when you hear that?
I love it. I love the opportunity to come on in and change that narrative. That's where great stories are written.
Well, the things that are NFL stories are going on in Minneapolis. The owners' meetings, the tush-push, if you will, mentioned.
I would argue, and I'm going to be very interesting to see what happens with that, because word is that the league is ready to ban it.
Man, I tell you what, does it become an explosive play ever? Have you ever seen a tush-push become an explosive play?
It'd become a first down or a touchdown.
Yeah. I like explosive play. I like big plays. So I'm not a big tush-push guy myself.
Start your mornings with Mully and Haw, 5:30 till 10 a.m. on 670 The Score.
Good morning.
Let's go.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. It's alive. The Tush Push lives to see another day.
Good morning, Molly. Happy Thursday.
How happy is it that the Tush Push is alive?
Oh, I think it's good.
I think it's hilarious.
I love Ben Johnson's response. I think that it's fine that the Tush Push lived. I thought that the impassioned defense of it was more than it probably deserved, or more than we have talked about it so much for a play that basically gains a yard. But ultimately, it came down to not having two votes. 22-10.
Oh, that's so two votes. It's gotta be so embittering for the people that were hoping
it
to
had
get
to
rid
be.
Of it.
It had to be. There was this suggestion that it's not a safe play. The problem with that is there was no evidence to support that contention. So
yeah,
the tush push lives on. It trudges forward.
It lives.
It lives.
It
perseveres.
You know, I mean, I think that is the best reaction, Bigsy. Like, it's not an explosive play. It's got first downs, touchdowns. I mean, it ends
whatever.
In first downs and touchdowns. I'm just saying, it does. That seems like a pretty successful play, especially the way they run it. Did you see the...
But imagine, though, being an offensive-minded coach, running a football team that is owned by... somebody who's opposed
the
tush push, but you don't really have a strong feeling, and you might even be in favor of it. So you're going to split the difference. Ben Johnson handled that as skillfully as he handled everything yesterday.
Yeah, he was great yesterday.
He was
great
really
every
good.
Time we've seen him. Just let's get to the games and we'll see. That's all.
You really hope that he can coach based on how well he communicates.
No question about
because
it.
Because if he coaches as well as he communicates, the Bears are going to the playoffs.
I got to tell you, I believe the guy, what he says. Congratulations to him for getting the gig and taking the gig. And I think it's going to be fun. It's just going to be fun to see how the whole thing unfolds. And, you know, he loves it. I love it. He wants to prove that's how great stories are made, David. Didn't you know that? They're,
mm-hmm.
They're not just written by you.
Well, that is. Thank you. That is how great stories are made, because they change the narrative. You find a theme and you go with it. And I think Ben Johnson gave some thought to how he would handle this Caleb Williams conundrum. And he did in a way that did shift the focus. And that's what good coaches do, really. They find ways to command the attention or divert it from the distraction or the problem or the player. We've seen it in Chicago with really championship coaches and managers. Yep. We saw it with Ozzie Guillen. We saw it with Joe Maddon. I think Ben Johnson has that kind of possibility and potential to be a guy that takes away the focus from his team, like he did yesterday with Caleb Williams. He shifted the narrative.
Yeah, no, he did fine. He was not the problem. I still think they should have just gotten it behind him and moved on. I mean, I just don't quite understand why you wouldn't want to just get it over with. But, hey, that's okay. They're entitled to do whatever they want. But I think that especially when it comes to league rules and stuff, you just got to be extra careful because you do not want to be tearing down stuff and then find out that maybe I made a mistake. Maybe this was wrong. Maybe we overreacted. I think it's really interesting, depending on where you looked, you got either the feeling that, you know, what Kelsey did was explain the blocking each guy does. He basically, you would like to, you know, call your defensive coordinator, hey, get in this room, because he explains exactly what the blocking scheme is and where everyone's trying to go and what they're trying to do. And he claimed that there is no risk to it, that there is no...
He's no doctor either.
No.
He was only brought there to Minneapolis. Jason Kelsey showed up to argue on behalf of the play after Jeffrey Lurie, I guess, gave, from what reports said, was
an hour long
speech, monologue, and with some really off-color jokes or analogies, things that probably were, you know, if you're going to offer that in your speech, you might want to have a different speechwriter. But
and he got chastised.
And as he should have, nonetheless. Nonetheless, that play got a lot of attention. I thought Jason Kelsey was smart in coming to address it, defend it, and explain it, every aspect of it.
Yeah.
And it's a football play. And so stop it, and maybe it'll be revisited next year, or maybe it'll be a moot point if the Eagles can't successfully continue to execute it.
The thing that really amused me is that, you know, the Eagles do it more than anyone, right? No one else can do it like the Eagles do it. Since 2022, they have 108 attempts at it. Second, of course, the Bills with 55. Five American dollars, if you could tell me who's third.
Tampa Bay.
The Chicago Bears with 16.
Really?
What? I mean, I laughed out loud at that.
16 tush pushes?
16 fourth and one quarterback sneak. Since 2022. I'd love to see the success rate of those plays, because the Bears have been really bad in that time period, so they've been very desperate, so they've tried it 16 times.
Well, they've had a lot of fourth downs.
Yes.
And they've had probably, in at least one of those seasons, two of those seasons, a quarterback that they thought would be able to get them the tough yard. Apparently, Justin Fields would be perfect for a quarterback sneak.
Apparently it didn't work enough.
Only 16 times, though.
But isn't that hilarious
that
the Bears were the third team to attempt
it? It's amusing. This whole thing has been somewhat amusing.
You know, that makes sense. The Eagles, they just won the Super Bowl. Oh, the Bills are supposed to win the Super Bowl every year. And then the Bears?
It's commanded way too much of our attention and time.
No question.
It moves on, and it lives on, and so we'll see
if the teams can
stop it.
Right?
It's a leverage game.
Until there's an injury?
Yeah, football is a leverage game. Get lower than the lowest, and I think that if teams can do that against the Eagles, they find a way to stop it, it will be much less discussed next offseason.
Yes.
So that was in Minneapolis.
Yep.
At House Hall, they had their first day of minicamp. I'm sorry, OTAs, mini camps, not
it
yet.
It was their second day of OTAs.
First
media day of the OTA. Yeah,
first media day. Good talks from Grady Jarrett, good talks from Tremaine Edmonds. You heard some good stuff from Ben Johnson. I mean, it was a good day to
dive in.
Kevin Byard.
Byard was good.
I love the way people talk about the safety position at Hallis Hall, Kevin Byard. And I guess you have to look at it this way, as if Jaquan Brisker is a guy who has answered those questions. There's some doubt. There's some uncertainty.
Well, he basically said there's doubt about himself and there's doubt about Jaquan Brisker.
Sounded pretty confident, though.
Yeah. No, I thought he handled it real well.
Byard always does.
Yeah, he's good.
He's a really good talker. So was Grady Jarrett.
Really good.
That guy has a presence. He's got the charisma.
That was one of the more surprising things, that when he first signed, he got a phone call from Jervon Dexter saying, hey, there's some of us getting together to work out down in Miami. Why don't you come down and work out with us? Isn't that great?
Yeah, you like to see that. That's how you build camaraderie.
I wouldn't have given it. I wouldn't have thought that Jervon Dexter was, hey, I'm having some guys down to Miami.
Big year for Jervon Dexter. Big year. Did you see where PFF voted him, named him the most underrated player in the Bears defense?
On the whole defense?
Yeah.
Huh.
I don't know about that. I don't know that he had that great of a year. And yet the numbers suggest he probably did. That seemed to be something like if you graded the film, he did okay. If you watched the tape, you were like, well, I'm waiting for him to arrive.
He's the best player, suspicion versus production. Is that what the idea is?
Perhaps. That's a good way to put it.
Okay.
Good way to put it. But I think I did like that anecdote.
That was cool.
The Bears are full. They have a locker room full of guys with pretty high character at this point.
It seems that way. Yep.
You like the look of the locker room, the depth chart, the Joe Tooney talk. He didn't say much.
You don't need eight captains if you got Joe Tooney and a defensive tackle that knows how to play and has been around for 8 years.
You don't need eight captains if you have Joe Tooney and Grady Jarrett.
That's what I'm trying to say.
Yeah. You don't need there to be a lot of talking.
You don't.
You need more doing, less talking.
There you go.
And more winning. Because I think that they have been open about this. It's been a losing culture at Halas Hall for too long. That seems to be the overriding theme. And that's why I think Ben Johnson has the Bears' attention. He's fiery. He's detailed.
Yeah, I like that detail.
I do too.
That he was fiery. That he was.
I like the fact that there was.
Second day of install, people were making mental errors and he was in their grill.
Cole Kmet was not lined up, did not have the proper split. He told them in no uncertain terms where to line up, do it again.
Yeah.
And Cole Kmet, he did it again.
Yeah.
So good for them. That's the way you change a culture.
I kind of wish it wasn't Cole Kmet.
Why?
Just because his replacement's here. I don't know. I mean,
his replacement hasn't been on the field yet.
I know, but you just get kind of like, oh, humana.
Well, I think it's a good way to send a message.
Do you walk off the field and walk up to the office and trade him?
No.
Okay.
No, they're not trading Cole Kmet.
I know they're not trading him. Certainly not in the second day of OTA.
They're not going to trade him the second day of the season.
I just don't want him
to
make a misstep. That's all.
No,
he's got enough issues. Local guy made good. Leave him alone.
No, don't leave him alone. Keep coaching him hard. You want everybody coached hard. Same way. That coaches like Ben Johnson can't help themselves.
No, it's great.
I like the way that on the Big Pro Football Show, Ruthie Polinsky described Ben Johnson with the walkie-talkie, calling plays into Caleb's helmet. And she said that at times he was like gripping that walkie-talkie like a stress ball, walking around. And, you know, so he's so wired.
We need a new walkie-talkie.
On the second day of OTAs, you wonder about how he's going to be on game day when he is in charge.
Well, they're already behind is what I'm hearing.
In terms of?
Install.
Yeah. Well.
It's day two.
Day two. They're
crushing the.
Well, they might be a little behind, but they have a lot to install. But I do like the fact he also, when he was talking about Caleb Williams, he was asked the question, like every quarterback taking over a new offense, what about footwork? How about the footwork? And he basically said that big picture, things are starting to fall into place. They're not focused so much on that. Those things will come. And he wanted to kind of shift that focus to be on, you know, not so much the little things, but big picture ideas and concepts.
Better than saying, what footwork?
Yeah, exactly.
You know, it is just a reminder that they're kind of in the crawl stage. They're not even in the cruising stage, if you think of human beings. They're still just trying to figure out how to make a little movement forward.
They're trying to learn how to win.
Well, they got to figure out how to walk before they're going to win.
That's all part of it. Yeah. It's relearning almost everything.
Everything.
A new offense, a new way of playing, a new scheme defensively. A new way of running through OTAs and practices. A lot of these guys have been through this before. What makes this time different? I think what makes this regime different, this time feel different, is what you heard when Ben Johnson got behind the mic and before he was even asked a question, head on, he addressed the Caleb Williams situation.
I find this a curious text. Guy says all those Bear high character guys were part of losing 10 straight games. No, that's not true. That we're talking about guys like Joe Tooney and Garrett Jarrett.
I think
we're not talking about, you're not listening to what
you specifically
saying.
Said with Joe Tooney and Grady Jarrett, there's no need for eight captains. Yeah. And you specifically were referring to the fact that there are new leaders and a new regime.
Thank you.
Yeah. I knew what you meant.
Listening a skill.
Sometimes it's hard to pull off, though, Mully. It's early.
I go.
It's early. And the coffee might not have kicked in either.
Yeah, well.
Keep texting 331.
Yeah. The coffee will eventually kick in.
It will?
For all of us.
Okay.
Please, God.
But, yeah, that was a good moment for Ben Johnson yesterday. We'll get into the details later. But it was a fun day.
And you're
day.
Right about that. He did take the pressure off of the quarterback. First thing he said, like, I've been working with the guy for 4 months, and the guy – is everything that I heard he was. He made him seem like he kind of went at this sort of narrative that he's not working hard enough. And
he did it without being asked a question.
Not even before.
He was aware of what everybody wanted to hear. Yep. And if they weren't going to supply Caleb, that is their decision. But if they weren't going to, Ben Johnson handled that as directly as you would want a head coach to address it.
Mm-hmm.
So good for him. And then the Cubs,
baseball. We had baseball yesterday early.
That?
Both teams played early.
How about
the
that?
Cubs played very early.
Got to love those early starts.
Yeah, I barely got home and the game was on. It was wonderful. And it was a fun game. Your guy, Cade Horton, was everything you wanted
How
to be.
How many innings?
He went five. Right?
How many runs?
Five and a third. I think that's his new longest. He gave up one run. He did pitch out of a couple of jams early. That was interesting to see. He did get himself freed of it.
First inning, too. First inning jam.
Yes, that was bad.
That was bad.
But it was good that he got recovered. Out of it. And then they actually got a save from Daniel Palencia. That is his first save.
It's a second career save, but the first one was a three-inning save in lower leverage situation against the Dodgers, I believe. But that was his first high leverage, one-run protected save.
That's good.
And I think when you look at what happened yesterday in Florida, they had that victory had everything that you would want from a Cub fan perspective. It had the young pitcher coming through with a good start. It had your young third baseman that was struggling really coming through with a hit and also a key steal. Matt Shaw has had a terrific series. Kyle Tucker.
Yes, he has.
With the big home run.
Kyle Tucker back, buddy.
Kyle Tucker back. Thank you.
Back to MVP form.
And Palencia with the save. You got your closer situation addressed immediately.
Mm-hmm.
You like that. So yesterday was a good day for the Cubs.
Yeah, and the White Sox, unfortunately, started pretty rough. Shane Smith got out there. I think he walked the first two batters and then gave up a three-run homer. That was 1-2-3, and then he gave up one hit the rest of the way. And he gave up no more walks the rest of the way. And he, I think he's the click to pick. I think he won. I think I'll take that victory and run.
No,
like
they lost, Molly. I'm sorry.
What?
It sucks.
But they were leading when he left.
Are you looking at this correctly? Sox lost. I'm
Hold
sorry.
On a second. Wait a second. Wait.
I think everything you said is right except for the outcome.
They had to make – no, but he was leading when he left. You're not listening. He's
all right,
the winner.
I'm sorry.
They had to put him out there as kind of drizzling. And obviously, he didn't like it too much. So
what's with this weather anyway? What is with this weather?
I am done with the weather.
Yeah.
I am. Is Memorial Day on Monday?
Yes.
I believe that's accurate.
Yeah.
So why don't we get this cleaned up a little bit?
Mm-hmm.
Shouldn't we have this cleaned up? Can we?
It's the first unofficial day of summer.
Clean up on aisle weather? Anybody
Isn't
here?
Isn't summer vacation starting Tuesday?
Is that it?
The Memorial Day weekend typically
Kicks
welcomes
off?
Unofficially summer.
I thought it was
But right now it feels like it's bear season.
I thought we were honoring people, not birthday people, but military people. I thought that was the point. Anybody?
Yes.
No.
Yesterday, the Sox deserved better.
They deserved
better. They hit three home runs. Yeah. You should win a game like that. You don't want to waste a game like that.
Well, the problem was they really should have waited a few more minutes.
Well, will they?
That's all.
Will they hit three home run runs in their next three games?
Well, Tim Melko, he got one of
them.
Yeah,
Big Timber's
and
hitting
he's
again.
There.
Well, he's going deep.
Sosa hit one of them.
Sammy.
Not Sammy. Lenin, right? Didn't he?
Lenin Sosa one? And Joshua Palacios.
And Palacios hit one.
Yeah.
So there you go.
Now,
the
I know.
The problem is the opponent
three
hit
home
three
runs.
Homers.
They gave up two. Yeah, you gave up too many to the Mariners.
And it wasn't Shane Smith's fault. They got the lead. He left with the lead. Ergo, he was the winner between him and Horton. I think we both agree on that. And we exchanged some text over.
I was just reminding you guys that Cade Horton went five innings and went one run like I might have said that he would. And then when I said that yesterday, I was like, oh, no, that's too much to expect.
Oh,
okay. Cade Horton was dealing. Now, Shane Smith pitched well. Not better than Cade Horton.
If he had just gotten out of that first inning, those first three batters were the problem. He didn't walk another guy, David. So those walks are therefore eliminated. The runs come down.
They didn't, though. They didn't. I'm sorry that was the case.
It was pretty cool. Bullpen
let him down.
Yeah, the bullpen let him down. White Sox down. But
they don't really have a closer. I think that was Chris Getz's point last Friday. They don't have a closer. Yes. They don't need a closer.
Yes.
Mike Vassell didn't have it yesterday. He typically has been better than that.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Disappointing. Dustin, did you enjoy the Cub victory?
It was nerve-wracking.
Yeah.
They got out of a lot of jams. I mean, should have been easier. If you didn't watch the game and you just looked at the box score, well, Cade Horton pretty good. But they had some trouble on the base pass. They induced some double plays. They played some good defense.
Yeah, they did.
The Cubs got lucky that the left fielder for the Marlins stinks and didn't field the ball properly.
It's a good hitter, but he let the ball go in his glove.
I mean, just stinks as a fielder.
So Shaughnessy could score.
Right. And then, you know, again, if you read the story is written
Shaughnessy?
That Palencia had a perfect ninth inning.
Uh-huh.
That was far from perfect.
Well,
okay, three very hard hit balls.
Shaughnessy.
Very hard hit balls.
I did go Shaughnessy.
You totally went Shaughnessy.
Well, Shaughnessy in Chicago, you know, you think of it's got a hockey connotation, but are we ready for Shaughnessy? Matt Shaw had a big day. Another good day. No, good
I
day.
I don't think we're ready for Shaughnessy.
He had two hits in the first two games of the series.
Do you want to go back to the throw in the beginning of the game?
Okay, but look.
Ooh, look at Dustin.
Just saying.
He saved a run, Dustin. And then the throw was high. He should have taken a little bit more time, just a tick more. But if he doesn't glove that, the run scores.
Hey,
the run still scores.
Honestly.
Because he had a bad throw.
Since coming back from the minor league.
The high throw?
Yes.
Shaughnessy has solved that third base problem.
Shaughnessy. No.
Did you say Shaughnessy?
No, I said Shaughnessy.
Oh, that sounded like Shaughnessy to an Irishman.
Do you think he could have made it? So you think that was poor defensive effort?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, when we want to give the guy an attaboy, I mean, yeah,
he's struggling, though. We give him an attaboy. This is a big series for him.
Big series. Listen, he can hit, and I'm sure he'll field fine. I'm just saying, the point is that he did have a mental error, I guess. Would you call that a mental or a physical error? I think more mental. I think he was so hopped up that he made the stop that he just.
I think maybe
so. Forgot who was coming out of the box.
Yeah, inexperience. I think so.
Texter suggests they start a Shaw-o-meter in center field.
Well, that put a lot of pressure on the young man.
Shaw-o-meter.
Just let him gradually ease into things. And I think I like the way Craig Counsell allowed him to do that this series, batting him ninth. He's going the other way. That's when you know things are going well for Matt Shaw. He's hitting the opposite field as he did the last couple of days.
Yeah, and Pat and Ron were pointing that out. Ron Coomer was loving that.
Oh, he always loves it when people go the other way. Opposite.
Yeah, I mean, I caught the majority of that game on radio yesterday.
It's a good choice.
Yeah. And it was a good broadcast. But I'm saying
I'm
thrilled they won. I
love
Pat
and Ron.
I'm thrilled it's the 30th win. I'm thrilled they're 10 games over 500. I'm trying to enjoy it. But again, that end of the game, that was far from a perfect.
Oh, just enjoy it, though.
Don't forget to listen tonight for all the fans out there. The Chicago Sky are taking on the New York Liberty right here on The Score. I believe, if I'm not mistaken. So
yes,
everyone get on
tonight.
That one.
That's yeah, right. Liberty and the Sky.
Yep,
Wintrust Arena.
Yep,
and good broadcast team.
Oh yeah,
and so it's right here on The Score, making little history tonight.
Leila Rahimi,
first time ever.
Will be debuting
first time ever
as the color analyst, I believe. If I'm not mistaken,
that is correct. Great. Yeah, and
we'll
it's
get a chance
be cool.
to talk to her about it in transition. We can see if she's doing all her homework and getting everything going.
That's not accurate, no.
What's not accurate?
Layla's not hosting today.
Oh, okay. So she is getting ready for the big game. All right. That'll be fun. I can't wait to hear it, and it'll be good. I usually kind of limit my basketball watching to Indiana teams.
That last night was something else.
Oh, was that something?
Oh, my gosh. What happened?
They nicked the Knicks.
Yeah, Tyrese Halliburton. That was one of the most clutch performances. And then everything was going right. They were down 9 with a minute to go.
Who's the three-point shooter? That guy went off. Holy cow. That guy was knocking down shots in the third quarter. Got him back in the game, set up Tyrese Halliburton for the big finish. Great stuff.
Kept him in the game, Aaron Naismith.
Naismith was unbelievable.
Invented basketball.
Yes, and he looked like
looked it. Like he invented the three-point
shot. Invented the trade
last night.
Yeah, fair enough. All right, we got so much to get to. The Pick 6 is next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of the Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to the Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Score.
It's Pick 6 with Mully and Haw, where we debate the top 6 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Haw. Pick 6 with Mully and Haw starts now.
What did you make of Kyle Tucker's second straight three-hit game, lifting the Cubs to a 2-1 victory over Miami to win that series and deliver their fifth victory in 6 games? Tucker homered and was involved in Matt Shaw's game-winning run in the 8th inning. Is he officially out of his slump?
Wow. May we all have slumps like that, right? I mean, yes, he was responsible for the runs. I believe you heard the manager say after the game, he provided the offense, and he sure did. Yeah, Kyle Tucker, man, good player. That is fun to watch, and he's back. He's back. Not that I mean, he kind of did the superhero act, and then it was just it was kind of like, hey, what, is he slowed down his hitting? I haven't seen him hit as much as he's hitting. Oh, don't worry about it. He'll be fine. Guess what? Don't worry about it.
He's fine.
Yeah, no doubt about it. So good to see. Gather ye rosebuds while ye may, as the old poem goes. When you're going against a team like that, make sure you win the series. That's all I'm saying. You got a lot of tough games over the course of a baseball season, and you are better than some teams. And even on the road, even though it's difficult, make sure you win series against teams that you are better than. And the Cubs have done that, and it is a good thing to see. And they did so again yesterday, and that sets them up nicely heading into division play, right? You want to make sure that you're not giving away a game that you would regret later. I think they'd have regretted losing that game because they did enough to win it. And they did win it. So congratulations to Kyle Tucker. He is a hell of a baseball player, and he's going to cash a lot of money at the end of the year. Hope he sticks around.
Yeah, interesting to see another game as the DH. So that was back-to-back games as the DH. Said in the post game that he had, you know, almost like mentally had worked on something, wasn't feeling 100% mentally, and had worked through something.
Did he bang his mind on the wall?
Perhaps.
Sorry.
I think Kyle Tucker batting second is where he seems most comfortable. Not that it matters too much, but I think he was definitely the guy that he's been for most of the season. His slump really wasn't that bad. And he came through with 3 hits when the Cubs needed him most. Going deep again. Yeah, he's the guy that after every outing like this, you start to be asked, well, is that the guy that they're going to spend $500 million to keep? Let it play out. There are 2 guys to retain. I think Tucker is probably a higher priority than PCA only because they have more control over PCA for longer. But by the way, Pecor Armstrong batting 4th, that's a real interesting decision. Craig Council likes his righty-lefty, righty-lefty, and to alternate the guys like that because Pecor Armstrong batting 4th, I thought that was almost a nod to Dustin because Michael Bush playing first base was not batting fourth. And I think that Dustin has been critical, understandably so, and wondering if the first baseman always has to bat fourth. So that was another kind of wrinkle to the Cubs' batting order. But when they are scoring runs, how they're scoring runs, they only got two yesterday, and you didn't really worry about that because they offense needed a day off because they've been carrying this team. The run scoring potential and the output for this team and production through 50 games has been historic. They have 14 innings, I think it is, where they scored five or more runs. It's crazy.
Which might answer your question.
Oh, that's the voice of Gordon Whitmire. We'll talk some Cubs and Reds with you guys at 9. How big was the Cubs series win over the Marlins? What was the most significant development? Cade Horton, strong start, or Daniel Palencia's big finish?
Well, I think Palencia gave you hope that if Porter Hodge, who started playing catch yesterday, can't come back right away, there is a potential solution at the back end of the bullpen. And maybe it's temporary, but it also could be lasting if he builds up some confidence and has some more moments like yesterday. Cade Horton's start, while yes, he had to escape danger he created for himself, was impressive. It was his second straight appearance where you left thinking he belongs. And I don't think that he needs to go anywhere. Keep him in the rotation. There's plenty of room for him to contribute to this team, which seems to be going somewhere. But the best thing about this victory, besides those two specific young pitchers coming through in the clutch, the best thing was it was 2-1. It wasn't 14-3. It wasn't 8-7. It wasn't a game where you had to rely upon your big bats to do some more booming and to carry you to victory. This was a game that they won on the margins. It was low scoring, and they eked it out. Good teams eke out one-run games as well as they can outslug teams, and the Cubs can do both, and this is a great example.
Yeah, and it was good to see younger guys that you've been developing and hoping would get up to this level and contribute at some point, contributed to that win. We talked about what Matt Shaw did at the plate, yep. What he maybe didn't do in the field. You know, Daniel Palencia, that was good, obviously good enough. And, you know, again, Horton, David, you're right. I mean, listen, you're not going to – if you want your best arms – we've heard this from the Cubs before, and this was a few years ago when they weren't very good. You want your best arms up at the big league level across the board. You want out-getters, right? So these guys – Cade Horton's a guy who's an out-getter, but I would keep Cade Horton in the rotation – before I'd keep Ben Brown in the rotation.
Thank you, me too.
And part of that was, and it was a big part of the broadcast yesterday, was the changeup.
New pitch.
That Cade Horton is working on and feeling comfortable with, and when he's delivering that, and his work with Amaya. Again, that's something else that's going to develop over time, because this is a young pitcher and a young catcher that haven't done a whole hell of a lot together, and they're developing a bond. That's important. So this was, listen, is bad as the loss was, this was as good of a win because of the low score, 2-1. You'd like to see the offense do a little bit more. I'm a little concerned about Ian Happ, right? So he's 1-10 in his two games back at the top of the order.
Right.
So maybe the day off. Maybe listen, isn't he really good in Cincinnati?
Yeah,
right? That's where
he
thrives in Cincinnati. So maybe this will help, and another day off will help. But, you know, maybe one of those games we'll see if they actually DH him and move Suzuki back over to
and
left.
Maybe move him down in the order.
Those two games were kind of his rehab stint, and then he's going to get a day off and head to Cincinnati. So I think he's going to be okay. I think if to answer the question, Cade Horton greater than and the most important thing that happened yesterday, because he did not have a smooth outing. He did get into some trouble, and he pitched his way out of it. And he is getting more and more impressive every time you see him. I agree that he does belong, and I loved seeing him with every time he used that pitch, it worked, by the way. So it's good to see him developing pitches. It feels a lot like Ben Brown's a two-pitch pitcher and belongs in the bullpen, ultimately might be where he is before very long, depending on – how long it takes people to get back. I know it's into June, and it's only the 22nd of May. But I got to say, Daniel Palencia, you know, he supposedly, why is he in that role? Because he's got swing and miss stuff. He didn't miss much. Those were flyouts, and there were some loud outs at the end of that game. And you couldn't help but think, if it were a windy day at Wrigley, I'm not sure that's the guy you want coming in and closing a game. So God bless him. Everything worked out. You can run like a thief in the night and take it. But I still would rather see like a giant offensive explosion without use of a closer.
2-1 was good.
Terrific question. Need to get that answer. Don't have it for you today.
Voice of Bruce Levine. He'll join you guys in the 8 o'clock hour this morning. How do you explain Shane Smith's bizarre start for the Sox? Was he unprepared for the inclement weather? Smith, who rarely gives up walks, walked the first two batters, then gave up a three-run homer before he settled down, going five innings with just two hits, two walks, six Ks. He had the lead when he left the game.
Yeah, listen, as I texted you, I am now drowning in coffee debt, for God's sake. It's just getting out of control. Never bet on the White Sox. That's underscore that lesson. But Shane Smith, it was bizarre only because the only two walks of the game he had were the first two pitches. He's not a walks guy. And then he gave up the dinger, and that was it. That was all that he did wrong the rest of the way. He only gave up one hit the rest of the way, and he struck out six guys, and he was dominant. He had a dominant start other than he looked so out of it coming out on the mound. I don't know if it was the cold and the rain. They said that at game time it was 52, felt like 41. Whatever it was,
oh, it was awful.
He couldn't throw a strike, and that's not him. So, you know, he walks two guys, and then he gives up a dinger. After that, the guy had a hell of a start. He was really good. I think he struck out two of the three that he got out in that inning. And, you know, he ended up throwing a pretty good game. But, you know, they got no bullpen at all, and they're the White Sox, and they're not built to win.
I mean, they are the first place Mariners, and maybe he wasn't used to that cold weather. It was, again, we talked about it a couple times. It was a miserable day yesterday. It's just not a day for baseball, not a day for a whole heck of a lot outdoors if you didn't have to be. Right. And again, some days we would celebrate the fact that it was 45 degrees out, like in March, not at the end of May, not on the third Wednesday before the
Memorial
holiday
Day.
Supposedly yep. Kicks off summer.
Shane Smith has been very good. He's been very consistent. Yesterday I started to wonder for the first time, like, now should the Sox use an opener? Because maybe he wasn't ready for that game or whatever, for whatever reason. Maybe he wasn't acclimated yet. But it was odd because of how he reacted to not being ready. And this is somebody who, that definitely was the exception to his rule this year. And I don't know what it was except for things you guys just described. But I wouldn't get too carried away in giving up on him or being disappointed in him. He's been more good than bad. It just was strange, and they needed him to be consistent. It's frustrating because there's so much about the Sox that are things that are frustrating. But they hit three home runs and lose. I don't know if they're going to hit three home runs in the next series. So you hit three home runs, you'd like to win the game that you hit three home runs, especially when you have your best starting pitcher on the mound.
That's a great question.
Ben Johnson with a great question for us. And did you like hearing about Ben Johnson's fiery approach on just the second day of install? There were plenty of mental errors and mistakes, and Johnson reportedly yelled at tight end Cole Kmet, local guy made good, at one point when he lined up in the wrong spot. Do you like it? Do the players like it?
I like everything that I heard from Ben Johnson yesterday. It was an easy day for a Bears fan to feel even better about the head coach who's here to essentially fix everything from the offense to the public relations to the quarterback to everything about the Bears that have frustrated people for too long. And I do appreciate his fiery approach to practice. This is Ben Johnson's personality coming out on the field. Maybe he's not sure how he would react as a head coach holding the walkie-talkie and squeezing it like a stress ball, as Ruthie described. And maybe he doesn't know yet how critical he will be of players who are veterans like Cole Kmet, but that's okay. He's authentic. He's himself. And that's who he was addressing the Caleb Williams issue from the get-go before being asked a question. Why did he do it that way? I don't know if it was even a conscious effort. It was just, this is the way he deals with crises. Head on. Head on. There's not going to be a lot of ambiguity with Ben Johnson. I don't think you're ever going to wonder where you stand with him, whether it's a reporter in the press corps or a player in his huddle. You're going to know what Ben Johnson thinks about what's going on. That's refreshing. So I liked everything that we saw. Yeah, it's only the second day of install. Yes, it's May, and he hasn't coached a game yet as a head coach. But the early indications are this guy is going to be worth the money.
Wouldn't you like Hard Knocks to be up at Hallis Hall this offseason instead of last offseason? Yeah, I mean, you like everything you heard. And one of the things that we did not know collectively, and I know I asked a lot about out loud, was whether or not Ben Johnson could lead the room. Could he be a leader of men, and could he get the defense's attention? And I think right now the answers are yes, yes, and yes.
You know, I think that the key to the question really could be found on just the second day of install. So I think this is exactly when you need this. I think you need a guy who doesn't have great relationships with the players. He's just meeting them. A guy who still is sort of they're looking at and wondering, what is he? How does he do it? They don't know him. I think this is exactly the time to sort of lay out, this is how it's going to be. This is how I'm going to do it. This is what is expected of you. You know, I can imagine that that might wear on people over a period of time, but I don't think it'll keep up in that intensity level over a period of time, because I think they'll start doing things right and he won't have to go after them after a certain period of time. I also think these are the same players that went to coaches last year. Didn't we hear that whole thing? We want to be coached. Don't be afraid to coach. All right, you got a guy now who's going to put a boot on you. You want to be coached? This guy will coach you. So make sure that you take the coaching and you do well with the coaching. I got a lot of good feelings about Ben Johnson. I think that it's not too difficult to like the things that he's doing. And I do like that he is in people's grill and that he's paying this kind of attention, because it's the attention to detail that matters. It's that tells you how to win. And they have a serious problem with that here. So he's got to get that all ironed out, and he's got to be coaching. And if he can coach at this level over the course of the year, at some point, you know, I imagine you collapse. But that is fun to kind of eavesdrop in on when you see it with the running backs coach screaming at people during the rookie mini camp, or when you get the head coach, you know, wrestling a microphone to the ground.
Is it worth noting that the players that you referenced in wanting to be coached and going to the coaching staff, two of those players, maybe the loudest among them, Mercedes Lewis and Keenan Allen, were not invited back?
No, I think it's pretty obvious why.
I'll get to your question.
And I like their leadership now.
Better. I like their leadership better.
I do too.
Yep.
How surprised were you that the Tush Push survived after NFL owners only got 22 votes to ban it? What do you think swayed the decision during a meeting that reportedly got a little heated?
Love a heated meeting. Let's get that out there. I love confrontation. I love Jeffrey Lurie going up there and what he had to say, standing up for his team and for the architects that came up with that play, because they got the best quarterback to run it. And he mouthed off a little bit too much, and I like that they got pushback. I like that he got told, hey, you know, you got women in this meeting, act like a gentleman. And I like that he was told, hey, you got any more of your nonsense? You've already taken an hour. I thought it was funny. I thought it was good, and I think that they had a serious conversation. Here's the thing. They were getting rid of that play not for fear of safety. That was the ostensible reason, and that's what they wanted you to believe. But the fact is they had no proof of that. They were getting rid of that play because one team does it better, and a couple of teams in their division didn't want to see it anymore. And I really believe that. And I think that the very fact that enough owners listened to what everyone was saying and said, yeah, that's not right, and they only got 22 of the 24 votes. They were close, and they were close going in. And they thought they had the numbers because everybody and their brother was saying the thing was going to be banned. So that means whatever was done on the day convinced a couple of people that it was only fair to back off and wait until someone twists an ankle or some injury occurs before you stop it over injury.
Interesting. They have a supposed that sources told Adam Schefter the team, there were 10 teams' names. So the Bears voted against it. The Bears also wanted it out. But as you said, it was 22 to 10. So it was fairly close. They only needed two more teams. But I think the biggest difference was Jason Kelce, if you're believing what you heard. The other part of it is, you know, safety supposedly is a big deal, and there is absolutely zero evidence that this is an unsafe play. There is no data that says anybody has been hurt or missed time because of this play. David, you said it many times. It's a football play. My first recollection of a play like this, I hated the play, and you could probably guess what it is. We go back to USC Notre Dame.
The push.
Okay, that was the first, and I said this is incredibly illegal. Now beyond the tush push, now they have offensive linemen who are downfield, and they get into kind of like a scrum. The offensive lineman will literally grab his running back or his tight end, mm-hmm. and he will like throw him forward for a couple more yards. That should be illegal.
Why?
Like, when did they ever teach you could do that?
Knock off the offensive lineman. Don't let him do that.
That's what I just said. That should be an illegal play.
No. If you're a defensive player.
Well, I don't. You're not. But then you might get holding called on the defensive player for holding on to the offensive lineman. I'm just saying there's other plays. I'm glad it didn't. But didn't somebody come after you saying that Kelce wasn't? Wasn't that towards the end of the show yesterday that Kelce, was it a texter, tried to say that you were wrong by saying that Jason Kelce was going up there to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And, yeah. Somebody
and you were right. And yeah. Our reporting was right. Kelce wasn't just up there to stand there and look tough.
He went there and spoke.
He broke down the blocking on the play.
And he said he would unretire if they could run that play more
often.
He said if
they ran that 60 times a game.
That's how much he likes to run that play.
Jason Kelce made an impact. He explained it. He answered questions reportedly. Jerry Jones had a couple questions. And this was informative. It was educational. And he basically, I think, won the day. Jeffrey Lurie, give him credit for addressing it. I don't know if he needed an hour to filibuster. That sounds like it was incredibly boring.
That sounds awful.
Contentious, yes. Boring, definitely. Goodness sakes.
An hour.
Find an editor. You know,
But see, what's interesting about that, sorry, one report said an hour, another report said 20 minutes. So what,
may
you
have
know,
felt
it's
like an hour.
20 minutes one, feels like an hour if the guy's repeating himself, right?
And then Troy Vincent, lighten up.
I don't know,
Troy
man.
Troy Vincent, get more upset about the fact that the information, that the language used, that information got out of the room.
Well, both things can be true.
Defend that. And also, don't you kind of work for the Eagles, Troy Vincent?
No.
Yeah, no, he played for them.
He now works for the Eagles.
Yeah,
he works for the league.
Yeah, no, I think you're good passion, Dustin, but I think you're mixing things up here. There's nothing about Jeffrey Lurie. You can make your point without getting crude about it, and you don't even have to include ridiculous analogies. That
was a dumb analogy. I just don't think that Troy Vincent needed to like then use that to like
chastise him.
Right. Like that information. In my opinion, we should not know that information. We should not be privy to know. We should know the vote. We should know who was for it and against it. I don't need to hear the blow-by-blow.
Yeah, we do.
Oh, I love that reporting.
That's reporting.
Stuff.
That's good stuff.
Yeah, that was the best.
We rely on reporting. How can you be against reporting? How are you anti-information?
What's wrong?
We survive on reporting.
Ask him what's
wrong.
All right,
real quick. Jason Kelce made a difference. Jeffrey Lurie made a difference. Never has there been one play talked about and discussed more than the tush push, it seems. Let's move on because – It's a play. It's a football play. You don't like it? Stop it. Stop talking about it. Start doing something about it.
Can't be stopped. They would.
Can't be stopped.
It can't be stopped.
Lower than the lowest. It's a leverage game.
They have the timing. They know the time, and you don't. I would say, though, David, that it is the kind of play they could still do without the push, right? They can still run a quarterback sneak. I think they'd still be good at it. You know, the other thing is, the first time I saw that play, didn't the Fridge try to pick up Walter Payton and carry him over the line one time? And they called a penalty on that.
I don't remember that.
I think that happened.
I remember that. And they
called a penalty on it because you weren't allowed to help the ball carrier.
I just remember.
And then they changed that rule.
The attention started being paid in earnest when Reggie Bush and Matt Leinart scored from the one against the Irish.
We need to talk about USC also chickening out of that series.
How do we know they chickened out of the series? Was there a reporter there telling us?
We don't know.
Well, the contract has not been extended, and this is the last year of the game.
How do we know that? From a reporter who's doing his job?
It's a secret that shouldn't be reported.
When is there – I didn't go to Medill, but when is the – and I don't have a pass that gets me in every baseball game for free.
The double whammy.
But, again, what about, off the record, on the record type of stuff?
All right, we'll get into that later.
Thank you.
I ask this question, a lot, obviously.
Several reports said the Blackhawks will hire Jeff Baschel as the next head coach. Thank goodness for reporting. We have discussed the pros and cons of Baschel, but do you think Connor Bedard was consulted? How sensitive do the Hawks have to be about making Bedard happy so he wants to sign an extension?
This is all over the hockey world about yesterday. The NFL Network had a report that Jeff Baschel was already going to be announced and had been cited as early as today. Kyle Davidson is out of town, so obviously the Hawks were not in a position to make that announcement or maybe even confirm it. They may still be looking. But if Jeff Baschel is the next guy, I've got to believe, even though I'm not reporting this, I don't know this, I've got to believe they've talked to Connor Bedard throughout this process. Is that naive to think that, as much as we talked about the Bears maybe including Caleb Williams in some of the conversations about the next head coach for the football team, for the quarterback, don't you think that Bedard should have at least had some, I don't want to say say, but awareness of what was going on? If not, I think it might be naive. This is somebody who you need to commit to, and you need to sign him to an extension. So if that wasn't the case, I'll be a little disappointed and somewhat surprised. Jeff Baschel is not a guy who's going to necessarily move the needle, but I do think that he is a guy that you'd have to give a chance, keep an open mind. It seems like they might be settling, but he also could do an excellent job of being the transition guy. I thought they already had hired the transition guy. We'll wait and see what happens next and wait for that next report.
Yeah, Connor Bedard should not be learning who the Blackhawks are talking to or who the Blackhawks are on the verge of hiring through social media.
Yeah, I would hope that he feels like he's a very important part of the organization. And I would hope that the general manager loops him in on things he's thinking about and what's going on and just has developed a rapport with the kid, because he is the future of the organization. And I would hope that they've got a good relationship. I suspect they do. And I'm with you. I don't know that I need to go to him with a list. Okay, which guy? Who should we go after? And I'm not going to tax him with my job. But I think, hey, we're looking around. This is a really interesting guy. Let me tell you a little bit something about him. I would hope that those sorts of things are going on, because he is. You better have that guy on your side, and you better have him feel like he's got a vested interest in sticking around here, without a doubt. What do you think? Is that a good hire, bad hire?
I think it's a good hire.
Okay.
I think it's a good hire given where they are and how attractive the job isn't right now to the top guys who want to take a job like Mike Sullivan wanted to get to the playoffs. Rick Tocchet wants to get to the playoffs sooner rather than later. The Hawks are several years away.
Yeah.
So I can understand why there was limited interest or tepid interest in it.
Well, let's hope it's a good hire.
Yeah.
All right, we got the extra point next. Mully and Haw on the score.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Set up this extra point.
It's time for the Extra Point with Mullion Haugh on 670 The Score.
What did you think of the way Ben Johnson handled questions about Caleb Williams and the comments attributed to Carl Williams about not wanting Caleb to play for the Bears?
When you hear it uttered, as in from the article from the upcoming book, that Chicago is where quarterbacks go to die. Like, from a distance, did you see that? And what do you think when you hear that?
I love it. I love it. I love the opportunity to come on in and change that narrative. That's where great stories are written. And so we're looking to write a new chapter here, 2025 Chicago Bears, and looking forward to the future.
All right. Your reaction to what you heard there from Ben Johnson, that question asked by our very own Mark Rohde.
Could not have answered it any better. Could not have hoped for a better response. That's leadership. That's crisis management. That's something that we aren't used to hearing, frankly, from Hallis Hall. You get ahead of the story. You don't shy away from a challenge. You acknowledge it and move on. And it's time to move on. I know that we're not going to be able to until we hear from Caleb Williams, which might have been the misstep from yesterday, the biggest one, because he could have made this all go away. And the sooner this goes away, the better. Because what Ben Johnson said is exactly right. He came here, and because he is here, to embrace this challenge, a lot of this other stuff is moot. Caleb Williams, even without saying anything to address whether or not he, you know, was reluctant about coming to where quarterbacks go to die, as his father put it, his actions have spoken much louder than any words could. This is somebody that we complimented during the season, after the season, before the season, for the way that he embraced being in the city, being part of the culture here. The sports culture and otherwise. He's everywhere. He's at schools at Whitney Young and Lane Tech. He's at games. He's what else do you need to see to say that Caleb Williams likes Chicago and loves being the Bears quarterback? I don't know. If we need to hear him at a press conference, fine. Ben Johnson could not have handled that any better. Like guys before him, Ozzie Guillen, Joe Maddon, the great managers and coaches, he deflected the attention away from his players and brought it to himself. Well done.
I agree. Well done. He looked that one right in the eye and addressed it wholeheartedly. But unfortunately, I have to say, it is typical Bears. You know, you're going to trot out Joe Tooney. You're going to trot out Tremaine Edmonds. And you're not going to let the fans or the media have the quarterback. Like, just finish it. As good as Ben Johnson did, the team dropped the ball. I've got to imagine Caleb Williams wanted to address this. We just talked about Connor Bedard being consulted or given a heads up. Do you think, I'm guessing behind the scenes that Caleb wanted to talk, and for some reason the Bears didn't let him talk. I don't understand that. I'd love to know the reason why.
Yeah, I think you're guessing on that.
Definitely allowed, not reporting it.
You're allowed to have your beliefs, but I don't think that that's necessarily accurate. I don't know. Let me tell you something. That was the exact correct scripted type of response. That was exactly what you needed at that moment. I'm not saying he scripted it, but I'm saying that was like absolutely the pitch perfect response. Just got it, nailed it. See ya. Bye. That was perfect. He did a great job responding to that question. It was an excellent question. Grody knows what he's doing, and it was almost like, you know, Ben Johnson did know it was coming, and he knew exactly what he wanted to say about it. And honestly, you couldn't script it any better. It
gives you confidence perfect. That he knows how to handle
no doubt
delicate situations and to respond in a way that inspires confidence.
Yeah, and I mean, this whole season is really goes back to that question and that response. because let's see the story unfold. Mm-hmm. It is exactly the kind of story you want to read here in Chicago. And that guy kind of laid it out for you. Just let it sing.
Ben Johnson, there are parallels between the perceived reluctance of Caleb Williams coming to Chicago, where quarterbacks go to die, and Ben Johnson coming to a franchise that not exactly known for being a cradle for coaches.
You know, the perceived reluctance of the quarterback versus the aggressive optimism of the coach. He wanted this job. He got on the conference call with these guys and said, hey, I want this job. Yep. In case you don't know, yep. I want this job. That's, you know, that's how you get paid. That was exactly what this guy has. He's hit it out of the park a few different times. Guy's excellent. Really been good with what he's had to say. And so let's see him follow it up. Yep. Let's see it. Let's see it unfold. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
It's come to my attention that the quarterback's been out in the media over the last week. And just to get out in front of that a little bit, I just wanted to say I wasn't here last year. And so I can't speak too much in terms of what it was like before he got here and when he got here last year. But for my 4 months on the job, he's been outstanding to work with. And we just are focusing on getting a little better every day.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670, The Score. That's Ben Johnson. Ben Johnson yesterday at Hallis Hall, day two of the offensive install. And he had to deal with some outside noise, and he did so effortlessly.
He muted it. He did it effortlessly. He kind of
deftly
did what he needed to do from a head coaching perspective. It overshadowed some other things that were OTAs, not exactly newsworthy necessarily, but interesting. I think Karen Amagaji lining up at left tackle with the first offense was interesting. Ozzie Chipillo being with the second team, also interesting there. You look at the defensive strong side linebacker, Noah Sewell was with the ones. That's significant. Luther Burden the third did not practice with soft tissue.
That's interesting.
And you got to keep an eye on that. Those are the things that...
Is that from him falling on the ball?
Don't know. I don't know.
I'm just wondering.
We don't know that. It's a fair question. But those are the kind of little details that are, you know, worthy of just keeping in the back of your mind when you're talking about practice and OTA in the end of May.
Talking about practice.
But I do like the way Ben Johnson handled himself. And it also gave you confidence that when things do arise that require him to address, he's not going to shy away from it.
Yeah, no. I mean, listen, when somebody has the ability to speak extemporaneously and to answer any question, Theo Epstein, probably the greatest guy we've seen do that in mm-hmm. Chicago, you let him go. When you got the horses, you let them run. When you got the birds, David, you let them fly.
Did you just compare Ben Johnson to Theo Epstein?
No, I said that Theo was the best at doing that.
But I think that it's okay to do so. Theo is in a class by himself, but the way that he handled himself from day one, in a way that he communicated early on, made you think that he was going to be able to...
Nothing to hide.
Accomplish things.
Totally transparent, and we're going to get through everything. And, you know, we have this problem and that problem, but every single game is sacred.
It really is amazing, and maybe that's overstating it. It really is impressive and enlightening that you see guys like Theo Epstein, and I think Ben Johnson to a lesser degree so far, when they are transparent, it does come across in a way that is... Yeah, you know, it makes you believe them more.
It gives them credibility.
It gives them more credibility. Yeah, and
nothing to hide here.
You wonder why more executives and coaches aren't like that.
I think a lot of people aren't as well-spoken as those two guys. A lot of people can get a little bit tongue-tied just in the course of an answer to a question. And I also think that it is difficult, unless you are really bright, to answer a question, give a full answer while also kind of hiding some element of it that you don't quite want out there yet.
That's a good way to put it. Not everybody is as skilled behind the microphone as Ben Johnson is, certainly in the coaching industry. Some guys are good at it. Some guys just aren't. And when they are, I think we'll just say it can inspire belief, and it can galvanize a room.
Yeah.
And an organization.
Little doubt about that. All right. We've got to get to Dan Weidrich. Dan was out there yesterday. We'll ask him what he saw, what the vibe was, etc. And we'll do that next. It's Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score.
Hey there, I'm Kendra Adachi, and my show, The Lazy Genius Podcast, helps you be a genius about the things that matter and lazy about the things that don't, and you get to decide what matters. I'm not here to tell you what to do. I'm here to give you a new way to see. Episodes of The Lazy Genius Podcast are full of compassionate time management tips and permission slips to do what makes sense for you. New episodes drop every Monday. Follow and listen to The Lazy Genius Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.